You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, welcome into a Thursday edition of Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, the only podcast that breaks down every Heat game, news item, rumor, and more. Thanks for listening on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or on the brand new podcast app, Himalaya. My name is Wes Goldberg, and I'm here as always with David Ramil. Just when you thought the ending couldn't get more perfect, we got on this show after last night's game, after last night's emotional game that marked Dwayne Wade's last in Miami, and said that that would go down as Dwayne's last game. That 10 years from now, we wouldn't remember the anticlimactic 82nd game on the schedule of Dwayne's last dance. And boy, were we wrong. In his last game, Dwayne put up his fifth career triple-double, fittingly capped off by Udonis Haslem hitting a pull-up mid-range jumper to get Dwayne his 10th assist. Dwayne talked Tuesday night about how he's come to rely on Udonis on and off the court, and tonight he relied on him again to get him that triple-double that he was gunning for. Dwayne's best friends, his wife, his college coach, and former teammates made the trip to Brooklyn. Dwayne, after falling on the scorer's table after Tuesday's game, managed to play his last 36 minutes, and he gave all of them a show.
Last night was so phenomenal. You know, it was so great that, you know, coming here today, obviously it was the end. I gave everything I had last night. So just for the fans to be here, Jax, I'm going to lie. When I fell on that scorer's table, I hurt my knee so bad. I didn't think I was going to be able to play in the game, but, you know, I was like, let me go out there and see what I could do, you know, because I know everybody was pointing at this game being my last one and they wanted to be here. So I'm glad I can get out here and just have some fun.
Dwayne said after the game that this is an Oscar-winning script. I think after last night it sunk in for me that I won't ever watch Dwayne Wade play basketball again. But David, these last two games felt like an absolute party. And just like when someone important to you passes on, I think that's probably the best way to move on to whatever is next.
It certainly makes the bitter pill easier to swallow. I think we can remember Wade fondly as a result. Could you imagine if he had stayed in Chicago or played out last season in Cleveland and then wound up never coming back to Miami, never having this 82-game stretch where he reminded us about his greatness and his impact in South Florida? It would have been a travesty. And even, you know, if things had played out a little differently over the course of the season, like I mentioned in our previous podcast, you know, if we had advanced to the playoffs, if he had gone and perhaps shot poorly against Milwaukee or Toronto or whomever they might have faced in the playoffs, it would have been not necessarily as heartwarming. It wouldn't have been the same story. It wouldn't have felt as encouraging. This is a good cap for the season. You know, again, we keep repeating this point, but it bears repeating. You know, this season has been all about Dwayne. We never expected this team to advance deep into the playoffs. It wasn't about a championship run. They would have advanced to the playoffs and probably been swept or maybe pulled out a victory against a top-seeded team in the Eastern Conference. And it would have taken away from admiring him and accepting that this was the last of his great career. And so I think seeing this back-to-back great performance from him, one in Miami, one in Brooklyn, really did help us accept that and kind of come to grips with it a little bit better. Like you said, it reminds me a lot of, say, the New Orleans brass band walking down the street, you know, Bourbon Street, as they you know, go from one funeral procession to another, because, you know, it's all about a celebration. You get to kind of enjoy the last moment, and it's not about mourning. It's about saying, you know what, he was the greatest to ever play the game in Miami, and we kind of just want to remember him fondly in that sense, and I think this really helped to accomplish that.
And the Brooklyn game was an interesting way to do it. We had talked a lot about how it was kind of messed up that like the 82nd game on the schedule wasn't in Miami.
Yeah.
But that last little chapter, I mean, the Miami was this intimate kind of setting, a lot of tribute videos, you know, his family was in there. It was just everybody from Miami was there. It was very, again, intimate. It was local. It was for Miami. And then it was Brooklyn ended up being the after party to the party. Yeah. You know, yeah. With all like LeBron and Chris Paul and Carmelo Anthony showing up and, you know, everybody making a big deal out of it. And Brooklyn sort of trying and then eventually laying down and just being like, you know what? Well, they laid down because they were up by like 30 points at one point. Miami basically laid down from the beginning. Dwayne Wade took, you know, 28 shots tonight, 13 three-pointers, way more than anybody else took on the team. They basically were just like, you know what? Get it out. And then Udonis Haslem started the game too, which I thought was a really interesting wrinkle because he hadn't started in Miami. He came in at the end of the game because obviously there were still playoff implications at stake, but knowing that they were eliminated, Haslam got the start. He played 30 minutes. Wade, again, played 36 minutes, and it was just sort of from the very beginning, there was no playoff, you know, what-ifs happening. It was just sort of like, all right, let's just let loose. Let's just sort of like let our hair down and then just go for it. And again, it was very much an after party. And at the end of the game, you know, Dwayne Wade had his moments with the people that were close to him that came into the league. It was almost more of a national ceremony than it was a local ceremony. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And it was nice for any player, I mean, but for specifically for Dwayne, to be able to have his closest friends who are also among the top competitors in this league. You know, Carmelo hasn't played in some time, but he's still an all-time great, whatever your opinion of him might be now, and the version of him that we've seen over the last couple of seasons, he's still a great player. LeBron, clearly still a great player. Chris Paul, clearly, you know, he has to help lead the Houston Rockets in the playoffs to potentially, you know, upset the Golden State Warriors, and they're there because of the relationship they built off the court. I think as we're looking at these players now, and you know, it's tough not to draw a parallel, at least for me anyway, to what we're seeing in Dallas with Dirk Nowitzki. Two different sides of the same coin, the coin of retirement, aging, etc. Dirk chose to do it a little quietly, although I had long suspected that he was going to be retiring because, well, if you've seen him play, you know that physically he's just not capable of trotting himself out there for another season. In Dwayne's case, he wanted to have this kind of opportunity to relish each moment, to celebrate it, to make it a little bit about him, you know, because it wouldn't be about him moving forward. Like, he's going to fade. All the greats fade. You know, we're at a generation now where people don't remember the greatness of Michael Jordan. And soon, before you know it, people will forget how great Dwayne Wade was, too. And that's the reality. And so for him to be able to appreciate this, and again, I think between him and Dirk, it's about going out in your own terms, about being able to enjoy the moment, about being able to define it. And it was nice to see that with his friends there, LeBron, Carmelo, Chris Paul, that it's about more than just a game. They form these relationships, business relationships, competitive relationships on the court that extend beyond just the game of basketball. And so we're seeing a change in the mentality from a player's perspective. Before, I remember my dad got season tickets the first season of the Miami Heat in Miami, specifically to watch the retirement tour of Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. And now we're thinking, you know, Kareem only played one game in the old Miami arena when he was with the Los Angeles Lakers. But it was enough for my father, who had grown up in New York and seen Lou Alcindor play, and then, of course, watch him play in Milwaukee and then eventually with the Lakers, to just be part of that moment there. You know, that was... We hadn't seen a retirement tour like that. It was obviously it was Kareem, I guess, to a couple decades later, it was Michael. And then another decade after that, it was Kobe. But these retirement tours are very few and far between. Far often for these players, it's about fading into the darkness, about not being able to go out there anymore because of injury, because they're just no longer wanted. I mean, that's the reality. And so this kind of changes the narrative a little bit, and I'm glad to have seen it play out the way it did.
You mentioned Dirk Nowitzki. He's sort of doing the Tim Duncan thing a little bit. It's a little bit different. You know, he did announce it at his last home game. Tim Duncan just sort of like sent in a fax and was like, "I'm out."
Yeah.
But Dwayne Wade has gotten some crap from, you know, pundits and people who don't really know what they're talking about, but. He said after the game that he's been preparing for this the whole time. He was basically asked the question, like, how do you feel walking away, having scored 30 points in your last home game, putting up a triple-double in your last game of your career? And he was like, no, like, I'm done. He kept saying, I'm done. Like, I've been preparing for this.
He never wavered
I've made myself
decision.
Ready for this. I've never wavered in this decision. And, the retirement tour, yeah, it's all about Dwayne. It's all about Dwayne. It's all about Dwayne. But I think it helps fans, and I think it helps the people who watched him for 16 years also come to terms with it, you know, yeah. Throughout the regular season. Like, you're seeing the parade just trot on, and you're like, all right, I know where the parade is going. I know that eventually in April, on April 10th, that will be the last time I get to watch Dwayne Wade play basketball. And Mavs fans, while they, of course, had the suspicion that this would be Dirk's last year, and I'm sure in their own way that they were gearing up towards this and preparing themselves for this to be Dirk's last year. They didn't know for certain. You know, I'm sure there were some Mavs fans out there
absolutely
holding out hope that Dirk Nowitzki would come back for another year. And he announces on the very last home game, and I'm not like taking shots at Dirk, but I'm just saying like that was the way he chose to do it because he didn't want the distractions. He didn't want the whole thing because it would probably make it harder. And we saw Dirk just start crying in San Antonio at the last tribute video of his last game. And it's just like, wow, that's really touching. It's really moving. I understand why somebody like Dirk wouldn't want to basically cry before every game of his last season, you know? But for Dwayne, he's always made so much, and people have talked so much about him being able to stay focused in the moment. Like, that was just more his character, and I do think that it helped Heat fans also just go along this ride, go along with the one last dance whole deal, and just say, all right, like, I'm almost ready for this, and just sort of prepare for that moment when Dwayne does play his last basketball game.
Yeah, I mean, it's – you don't want to ever – overstate things and compare it to like a death, but it kind of feels, at least in the, you know, in the sense that it's the sure. actual death of a playing era here for Dwayne. And rather than a sudden death, it was kind of a slow progression, and you still get to kind of look forward to each moment. You know, right. Nobody gets to pick the moment of their death, but in this case, he did. He got to choose April 10th as the
it
last day
it
of his
career. You're able to savor those moments. Like you're able to watch that Golden State Warriors buzzer beater and understand the context right. with which that happened, yeah. you know, like you understood that that's probably the last time Dwayne Wade hits a buzzer beater. It very well could be. And it definitely would be against the defending champion team like the Warriors. Like you get to fully appreciate it. And it just adds this level of context that you otherwise couldn't get. Wise is the indoor camera that does it all. Wise is packed with premium features that allows you to see everything from anywhere for just $20. Check in on your home anytime with the Wise app live stream in 1080p full HD. Images so clear, you won't miss a thing. Wise's mission is to create amazing smart home products that are available and affordable to everyone. Best of all, Wise provides free rolling 14-day cloud storage and without any subscription, and it's just $20 a camera. Easily check in on your kids or monitor your home in the middle of the workday. For whatever reason you need it, Wise can help. Go to wise.com/locked to get the guaranteed lowest price. That's wise.com, wyze/locked. David, we should mention that Dwayne Wade passed Elgin Baylor in that game for 29th on the all-time scoring list. I wanted to just kind of rattle off, now that Dwayne's career is over, his final statistics, rankings, however you want to put it. Three championships, NBA Finals, MVP, 13-time All-Star, 8-time All-NBA, 3-time All-Defense, 29th all-time in points now, 42nd in assists, 29th in steals, 7th in career usage percentage. I mean, that's a resume.
You probably could have gone even deeper. Blocks, yes. You know, game winners, etc. I mean, there were just so many moments over the course of his career. You know, I saw the ESPN broadcast that was showing the, erroneously showing the Magic Hornets game as opposed to Dwayne's last game in Brooklyn. And one of the things
showing
that Kemba's
last game in Charlotte.
Yeah. I mean, that's it. Look, I understand that. But Stan Van Gundy said something about Dwayne Wade and his impact. And it's one that I've used to as a barometer for Dwayne's greatness, is that there are so few players that have been able to change the course of a game single-handedly, not just on offense, but on defense as well. And Dwayne certainly fits that. I'm in his peak. I don't know that there was ever any player as good, to be honest with you. I mean, obviously Jordan. I don't think Kobe, maybe to some extent, he had some moments like that. But Dwayne's defense was so superlative at moments. Yes. And you know, it waned towards the end of his career, obviously. He was no longer as mobile as he once was, although he still had the 6'11 reach to block a number of shots. But in his prime, he was so good at being able to harass players, to get them to turn the ball over, to force a shot at the other end, and then to capitalize on those moments defensively and provide some incredible offense. And, you know, you watch Dwayne now and he's still able to have some great moments, but in his prime, he was just so special. Yeah. And it's incredible to think about what an incredible career he's had.
Yeah, the old man game, we always talk about offense as craftiness, you know, the pivots, the fadeaways, the turnarounds, all that fun stuff, right? The Euro step.
Sure.
The development of a three-point shot. quick aside, when they went to Mike Breen, not Mike Breen, Tom Crean, very similar names. Tom Crean, during the broadcast, Jax was interviewing him, and Tom just went on and on and on about like just real things that Dwayne Wade got better at, and started talking about like in the last 2 years, developed this sidestep three-pointer, which is unstoppable. And you're just like, I was loving every minute of it, because this is one of his former coaches who, you know, obviously coached him at Marquette and has watched him grow. And you can tell he's like kept really close tabs on Dwayne's game and tells his players, and even now in college, that, you know, tells them stories about Dwayne. I thought that was really cool. But as far as Dwayne's defense and his peak and just his prime, that span from 2006 and to 2010, you could argue he was the best player in basketball. He was as astonishing as LeBron James, or close to it. He was more accomplished than LeBron James. He was better than Kobe in that span. And I've said this 100 times, and this is why I always have Dwayne Wade second on my shooting guard all-time list. That peak was better than any peak that Kobe had. It just was. Dwayne Wade in those years was better than Kobe ever was. Now, Kobe had the sustained career. He was amazing. He had two different primes. He was incredible. But Dwayne was, like, in that, like, there was just, that run is so incomparable that it just stands on its own. And it's unfortunate that the Heat had two of their worst years during those seasons, right? So we're during that time frame, I should say. But and then the defense, I do think that that's going to get overlooked by people who probably didn't watch Dwayne closely, the pre-Big Three years. Mm-hmm. And that's going to be a thing. Like, whenever I hear the Harden arguments now, and I don't want to turn this into me bashing Kobe and me bashing James Harden, but every time I hear these arguments that Dwayne is overrated or whatever, I'm like, did you watch him? Did you really watch him on defense? Because he was not only was he a scoring champion, he was one of the best perimeter defenders in the league, and it wasn't very close. Like, he was, like I said, three-time all-defensive team, and he earned it. Kobe got a lot of love because he played for the Lakers. Dwayne earned it, and so, like, he still had a little bit of that old man game towards the end of his career. I talk about, like, the little poke-aways that he does from behind and stuff like that. Like, he's figured out how to make, you know, impact the game, like you said, on both ends, even though he's not the on-ball defender that he once was. He's not the dominant defender that he once was, but he still found a way to make an impact, just like he did on the offensive end.
And you know, something else that tends to get overlooked is, you know, and we always forget about this, even when we're talking about it, we talk about his defense, when I think most people talk about his offense primarily, but his playmaking ability is vastly overlooked. Like, we always tend to think of him as a shooting guard, but for all intents and purposes, he was Miami's best playmaker up until 2011. I mean, that he ceded that position to LeBron James because of LeBron's natural passing ability and his ability to be the focus of the offense was one thing. But for the most part, for the first eight seasons of Dwayne's career, he was the team's best playmaker by leaps and bounds. Like, I mean, whether it was Jason Williams or Gary Payton or Mario Chalmers or Carlos Arroyo or anybody that was on that roster, Ray Ferralston, Eddie Jones, anybody who played the point position along Dwayne, it was mostly Dwayne handling the playmaking abilities, and we always tend to overlook that. Like, I remember early in his first or second year, Eric Reed, you know, because, again, that was the mentality at that time, he would always question Dwayne's passing because it always seemed like he was leaving his feet too early. I don't know if you remember this, in 03-04, you know, he would go up for a shot, not find that shot there, leave his feet, and then make a pass at the last second. And then we didn't realize until years later, well, it's just his ability to make that pass that enables that. It's not necessarily a bad move on his part. It was just one that he was capable of pulling off more often than not. I mean, sure, he turned over the ball in his prime like anybody else did, but the reality was he was always looking to score or make a pass to somebody and find a cutter. He was a really, really, really good passer, an overlooked one. Again, when you think of LeBron, you think of his passing.
Well, when he ceded the sort of alpha dog status to LeBron,
yeah,
people always talk about that as some sort of mentality that he put his ego aside and everything. And yeah, I mean, but like when you actually think about what that meant on the court, that meant that Dwayne and LeBron weren't taking turns bringing the ball up anymore.
Sure.
That's really what it meant from an X's and O's standpoint. And then that's when Dwayne figured out how to play off the ball and became the best off-ball player in the league at that time. The most dangerous off-ball cutter in the NBA. He learned to be this amazing screener for LeBron. Like, it unlocked, like, you cede control. Like, okay, LeBron, this is your team. Go for it. You give him, you empower LeBron to not put up that dud that he did against the Mavericks in the finals, right? That was certainly part of it. But the other part of it was, this is how our offense is going to work now. LeBron's going to bring the ball up, and I'm going to be really good at this thing now.
His knack for losing a defender, and not because he was pushing off, as we've seen so many players do in their time, not because of anything else. He had a gift for kind of just saying, you know what, I'm going to hang back here.
Yeah, he wouldn't. He just wouldn't move. He'd play dead. He'd play possum.
Yeah, and you would overlook him because, again, LeBron commands a lot of attention, and rightfully so. And then at the last second, he would make a perfect cut along the baseline. He'd be right there for a reverse layup. It was perfect offense. It was great to watch, and it added another dynamic ability to his game. It was incredible to watch.
Remember to get this show every day. Subscribe to Locked On Heat on the new Himalaya podcast app. In an ever-expanding podcast world, you need Himalaya. With their personally curated playlists and new features, think of it as Spotify, but for podcasts. Download Himalaya at your app store and subscribe to Locked On Heat. David, Udonis Haslem also started the game, and there's a lot of questions going around about whether or not, you know, this will be Haslem's last game. I don't know that Udonis has made that decision. They asked Dwayne about it after the game. You know, what advice would you give Udonis? And he said, you know, I just tell him, if you want to keep playing, just keep playing. And the underlying message there is it ends. So if you're not ready for it to end, don't let it end. I don't know how to feel about it. I thought, and we had texted before the game, and we were sort of talking about, you know, Udonis is starting. This is it, you know, for sure. But I almost wonder if they started Udonis for Dwayne, you know, did they do it for Dwayne? Just like, look, let's run this thing back to 2006, you know?
Well, I feel like, you know, there are conversations all the time beyond what they reveal publicly, beyond what they even tell us privately when we have one-on-one conversations with these guys. There's always, you know, the private talks that they have in the locker room, on the bus, as they're traveling somewhere, on a team plane, et cetera. I get the feeling that UD's probably made it clear he intends to retire, and he just doesn't want that spoken about publicly. You know, I've long felt that way. I know that you talked to him personally a couple months ago, and you get that kind of change your perspective about whether or not he was going to retire. You know, I could see the argument that this was for Wade's sake, that, you know, to play alongside his one of his best friends and brothers was a special moment for both of those guys. But it's also a nod to Udonis to say that as much as Dwayne is getting, and rightfully so, getting as much attention as he is, you deserve it. You're a big part of everything that we've done here since 2003. And so you should get to start. We should all acknowledge the fact that you're a great team player. It's more than a lot of role players get to ever achieve over the course of their careers, especially towards the end of it. And so I think it was great of the Heat franchise. And can we acknowledge that? I mean, I think for all the bad blood that happened in between 2014 and 2016, between LeBron's departure, the way they handled the Chris Bosh situation, and Dwayne Wade's departure to Chicago, has Miami finally rebuilt all the goodwill that they may have lost at that point? I mean, they hosted Jimmy Butler. They had LeBron there. They welcomed everybody back. They gave Dwayne the kind of retirement tour every player could only hope to have. I mean, maybe with the exception of a guy like Dirk or somebody like that. But, you know, have they rebuilt whatever goodwill they may have lost at that point? Because I get the feeling that they kind of established themselves again as a family, as a franchise that takes care of their own, like unlike any other.
And you credit Dwayne Wade for that, right? Because he wanted to have this last dance. He created the hashtag. He put this sort of thing together. He had the idea for those jersey swaps, all that kind of stuff. And it was sort of this good feeling, this goodwill. I mentioned the word party. It just, these are the two most enjoyable games of the season, or among them for me. And they were, you know, one game eliminated the Heat from the playoffs and one had absolutely no consequences. And so,
Well, Pat has spoken. Yeah, he spoke about, you know, the departure in 2016 as his biggest mistake as a front office executive. That it would have made him sick to the stomach. He would have worried if it hadn't been able to play out this way. If they hadn't been able to acquire him via trade from the Cleveland Cavaliers last season. If they hadn't been as a franchise in a position to give Dwayne whatever he wanted to make his retirement the best it possibly could. It would have changed his franchise for the worse. And so I think they fixed a lot of things. So I'm glad to see that you agree with me.
And it does feel like this is really closing the door on something. LeBron left first. Chris Bosh, unfortunately, had to leave next under circumstances he couldn't control. And then Dwayne Wade was able to control his exit and did so in a way that was so entertaining that you close the door on this era. Whether or not Haslem retires or not, you really feel like this is closing the door on something here. this is the first time where next season will be the first time, barring anything crazy happening, that the Heat aren't going to have an international superstar on that roster.
Well, it will until they acquire LeBron James via trade.
But, yeah, it's just like, it kind of feels like, you know, unless LeBron doesn't bring his talents back to South Beach,
ooh,
it just does sort of feel like this is a new thing. You know, this is whatever it was after Alonzo Mourning. This was whatever it was, ooh, you know, this was, yeah, but like, that's kind of where we're at. And it kind of sucks, right? Like, you know, Dwayne Wade's gone, you know, it's that's a reality that we have to deal with, but it is a little bit exciting given the way that it all ended. You're talking about that goodwill. It just, there's a little bit more momentum, you know, going into the summer,
oh, sure,
and everything that's happened here. There's just a little bit more, given the way that a guy like Duncan Robinson went out and you know, scored 12 or 15 points or whatever it was in the last game. And
well,
Justice Winslow becoming like, you know, shooting threes with Steph Curry-like confidence in the last few games and all that stuff. It feels better.
You know, you mentioned the Zoe comparison there, and I don't know that it actually is a good comparison in the sense that Zoe's disease came from so out of nowhere. And
no, one, I meant like it that was the Alonzo Mourning era. Like when that happened, it closed the door on the 90s, right? It closed the door on the Alonzo Mourning, Tim Hardaway, you know, playoff, you know, perennial playoff team Heat teams. It closed the door on that era.
Yeah, but it was even one that was like unexpected because,
right,
you know, Zoe came back from injury after he had to go through therapy for the kidney treatment, and that kind of upset that team as they challenged the Charlotte Hornets in the playoffs that time. And then, you know, even then, even though he was part of the roster for the next season, he was on and off the court. He wasn't really a reliable player at that point. And it knocked over everything that they had hoped to accomplish. It felt a lot like what happened with Chris, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
It's
a bookmarker, right?
Sure.
It's a bookmarker. Like you're going through the chapters of the 31 years of Miami Heat, or however long, 32, whatever it's been. You're going through the chapters, and the first real bookmarker I would say is probably Alonzo's initial exit. Right? You turn the page down there. And that's like, all right, that's another. So then you flip to a new chapter, basically. And then they draft Dwayne Wade, and they go to the playoffs when he's a rookie. They trade for Shaquille O'Neal. Boom, boom, boom. 2009, you know, 2008, he wins the scoring title. Boom, boom. A couple of bad years. You turn that chapter down. 2010, is the big three chapter. And then this was like this weird, like, extra footnote on the big three chapter where it was the post LeBron, the post big three era is how we kept talking about. But with Wade gone now, it does feel like this is not even post LeBron. This is not post big three. This is just entirely a new thing.
Yeah. Yeah. I mentioned this statistic before, I'm sure, but you know, in the 24 years that since Pat Riley took over as an executive of the front office, they've had all but two seasons with either Alonzo or Dwayne Wade on the roster.
It's
remarkable. Yeah. Because, you know, there was that one season where Zoe was gone. There was a 1 year where Wade was gone, and then he came back the following one. So even for half a year, he was still on Miami's roster, and that's it. It was all just 2.5 seasons out of 24. They've had either Zoe or Wade to define the culture. And so there's a lot of questions about what happens next, but there was a nice interview. I don't know if you saw it online. Eric Reed talking to Justice Winslow in the locker room afterwards, and Justice says he's ready to become a leader, that he's learned from UD. He's learned from Dwayne. He wants to be the guy who leads this franchise into the next era. So that's encouraging, if nothing else.
Justice Winslow era. Let's talk a little bit about what's next for Dwayne Wade. We don't think he'll get hyper competitive like Kobe Bryant and just decide that he wants to win an Oscar and then go do that, right? That doesn't seem to be what his deal is. Probably not getting involved in a front office anywhere. He's probably not pulling a Michael Jordan and trying to own a team or do anything like that. He's definitely not coming out of retirement. That's not happening.
Does he get fat?
He does not get fat because he's married to Gabrielle Union and he can't. That would be bad. And he's moving to LA. Big vanity play there. There's no way he gets fat in LA. If anything, he's going to get in better shape.
Good point.
So he moves to LA. I think, you know, you mentioned earlier fading into the background a little bit here. I think he's going to fade even behind Gabrielle Union. And now he sort of just becomes this great father, supportive husband type thing for at least a couple years, you would think, while he tries to figure out what it is that he wants to do next. I don't see him doing broadcasts. Maybe he'll do the occasional like spot on TNT's Players Only or something just for the fun of it.
Yeah. You know, he might show just Shaq, you know, playing alongside Shaq there. I mean, that would be nice.
That would be fun. ESPN has their studio in LA. Maybe he makes appearances.
Good point.
The Turner, where the Shaq, they do that in Atlanta, right?
That's
where
right.
The Turner, yeah. So
these guys travel all over the place. I'm sure you wouldn't mind. Yeah.
Yeah. So I could see him there, but I'm trying to figure out, like, other than his Instagram feed, where do I see Dwayne Wade next? You know?
Wow, that is a good question. I mean, I know we'll see him at least once more from his exit interview, and then from that point, they'll clear out his locker. I'm sure that'll be.
I wonder if he even does the exit interview. This was sort of his exit interview.
I think he has to. I think it's just team protocol. Maybe not. Maybe you're right. Maybe he could do it.
It's become less of a thing in the NBA.
What's the point? You know, when you're not coming back, there's no need to exit. There's no statement that you need to leave behind, or you
Dwayne's
don't need
still
to
retiring. Yep.
Yeah. So yeah, that's a good point. Maybe there is no exit interview. And from that point forward, yeah, I mean, we probably won't see him for a while. Like, I mean, whenever he decides to come back, whatever role he wants to play, I'm sure the team will create it and make it available to him. You know, but it could be a long time. It could be a while. Maybe he'll come by and catch a game in Miami.
He'll see a game. Yeah, yeah. I mean, they're going to obviously have a place in Miami. They'll see a game.
When they go face the Lakers and Clippers, he should be there on courtside.
Yeah. True. Wherever Zaire decides to go to college, he hasn't made a decision, I don't think, yet. You know, I'm sure he'll go out there. They always, you know, Gabrielle Union, Dwayne Wade always end up at Nebraska football games. I'm sure we'll see them there.
Good point. Chicago Bears sidelines.
That's it. Look, this is why people clown on social media all the time, and for the good reason a lot. But this is a good reason why you should have Instagram and stuff like that. It's because it just lets you keep tabs on these people. I really do. I'm gonna be locked in to Dwayne Wade, and the hidden gem is Gabrielle Union's Instagram. It's not even a hidden gem. I think she has more followers, but. Gabrielle Union's Instagram is actually way better than Dwayne's Instagram for Dwayne Wade content. If you're into the Dwayne Wade content, no, because Dwayne's Instagram, I mean, it's great, but it's just a lot of like him talking to himself or talking to the camera while he's like laying out by the pool in LA and stuff. And like, that's great and everything. But I want like Gabrielle Union getting like the candid, like Dwayne Wade grilling with his kids and like playing with the dog and stuff. Like that's the Dwayne Wade content I'm here for.
I'm following them as you speak right now.
You weren't following them on Instagram already?
I don't think so.
All right. Well, now you are. See, this is how you keep Dwayne Wade in your life. It's perfect. All right. Well, we'll be in your life still. Locked On Heat. We're going to run a mailbag tomorrow. So we've already got a bunch of questions, but keep sending your questions in. I'm sure people, as the season is wraps up here, you've got a ton of questions about the offseason and stuff like that. This whole week, David, we've been talking about Dwayne Wade and for the right reason, but it's time to spin this thing forward. It's time to start looking to what's next. So get your mailbag questions in. Get anything you want us to talk about in. Thanks for listening. Remember that you could subscribe to this show on the new Himalaya podcast app, as well as Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. And when you get in your car, tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On Heat. You can connect with us on Twitter at Locked On Heat or email us at LockedOnHeat@gmail.com. You can connect with us on Instagram too now. Thank you for spending some time with us today. We'll catch you next time. Thanks for joining me, David.
You got it, Wes.
Crack it up, D.